Hello, and welcome to the Permaculture Vine podcast, where we talk about permaculture, people, and projects. So we're on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, various different channels. Thanks, guys, for joining us. So this is our monthly with Permaculture Canada, and today we have a special guest. Welcome, Sean.
Yeah, glad to be here. Love seeing all you guys here.
And for anybody who doesn't know us, we'll just go around and give us a quick intro. I'm Cormac Harkin from Vine Permaculture. Lindsay?
I'm Lindsay from Permaculture Canada and Arma Garden.
I am Graham Towerton with Permaculture Canada.
And I get to be the guest today, Sean Stanton with Roots and Culture.
That's great, guys. Thanks very much and welcome again. If anybody's got any questions in the audience, just put them in the... type them in and we'll get them. So today we have an update on what everybody's doing. We're going to be talking about the wildfires and how permaculture can play a role in helping people mitigate against wildfires. Ask us anything, again, if you have any questions, and then just what we're up to next month. So who wants to go first on the update? Oh, and we're hearing from Sean as well in the last 15, 20 minutes about Sean's new venture. So we'll just start from an update from ourselves. I haven't done anything the last month. Still not well. extreme tiredness, lethargy. But we'll get on to people who are doing stuff. Lindsay, do you want to go next? Just an update, what you've been up to?
Sure, just saying hi to Arletta and Azur and Rebecca, who all joined us on the live. Thanks for being here. For updates, yeah, quite a lot. I'm actually stepping into the terroir division of things and looking at orchards. And looking at how we can increase production for what is currently planted monoculture orchards all across the Western Canada. So that's a really big passion project of mine, and looking on how we can integrate with foodies and people that really have a keen eye into nutrient density in their food and how we can increase that with permaculture. So that's one of the things. Today I was actually meeting with Tree Canada. So looking at ways that we can get agroforestry projects funded for people, looking at shelter belts, how we can increase water infiltration and heal our watersheds through planting more trees. Also working on some urban designs and looking at, you know, trips to California, trips to Florida. And of course, these fires have highlighted, you know, how can we help with permaculture? So it's resurging all that research into, you know, planting for fire and having that as a consideration in our designs, as well as looking at possible current issues that could have stimulated the fires. I'm sure Graham can touch on that because that's his heartbeat, Mr. Aussie Eucalypse. He can talk on that one. But yeah, that's us in a nutshell. I'm just going to touch on a few projects, and those are my top ones. Thanks.
I'll go next then. January is actually turning out to be a pretty busy month for me. Normally it's not. You know, I like to hibernate in winter, but this year I'm inspired to get a lot more done with a lot of encouragement and help from Julia Fouty, our farm manager and fellow permaculture designer. So we've been doing a lot of indoor and outdoor construction work. You know, so planting season is obviously still a long ways away. So we're using the downtime from our installation work and from our outdoor gardening and farming activities to get stuck into a whole heap of construction. So almost finished with a greenhouse. We've got, I think, three panels left to go on the roof and the end walls to build, and then a source of additional heat and some thermal mass. And then we'll be off to the races before spring gets here with the greenhouse that we're planning to use for all of our seedling raising. For our spring gardens, for us and for our customers. And then I put a wood stove into my workshop in the barn, in the big barn, the world's largest man cave. If you follow me on Instagram, you'll see pictures of that. Got some more lighting put up. We put out a bunch of straw that had been sitting in one end and finally got one end clear after 10 years of being here to remove all the straw. Then we've got attic work. I was on a podcast with Scott Miller of Thriving the Future, So that was a bunch of fun. And then we've been walking around and observing and interacting. One of the little principles of permaculture that Julia has like encouraged me to always do. And wintertime, we've been observing all the different animal tracks and doing things like understanding their habitat and what they're using during the winter months. So that's what we've been up to in a nutshell. Can talk on detail on any of that. And then we've got a lot of stuff in front of us in terms of new activities that we're planning for January. The seedlings I mentioned, we're going to do some aeroponics work. We're going to do three different types of systems there for testing them out. Some presentations to a local nursery or two. Some customer meetings in different locations. You know, like Lindsay had said, headed out to California and Florida, but I've also got some new customers to meet in Indiana next week. And then a big project to think about on the solar farm around me. So that's, I guess, the overview, and then we can talk in details.
Great stuff. So welcome to Brickazoid and Family Permaculture as well. I've just joined on the Instagram feed. You're very welcome. Sean, do you want to tell us what you've been up to? Well, we can hear about your, we're going to give you a good in-depth at the end. About your new venture.
Yeah, I'll give you a brief update where we're at. Yeah, January, you know, I usually like to kind of be hibernating at this time too. You know, I'm usually a busy farmer or HVAC tech as well. You know, I'm homesteader and HVAC business owner, so I'm usually pretty busy through the summer. But we're ramping up operations here with our whole family, starting a new business called Roots and Culture. Just launched it Sunday with Our Future with Matt Powers, the online conference, and that went really well. Yesterday marked, January 15th is usually when we start getting serious about garden planning and getting our onion seeds in our greenhouse and stuff like that. It's my youngest boy's birthday, so we were eating cake instead. So I'm just excited to be here. I've been constantly networking and just, Cormac was generous to invite me here and talk with you guys, and very excited.
Awesome. Good to see you.
Yeah. Likewise.
So I'm supposed to be doing some onion seeds and stuff. I haven't got around yet. So what are you all doing in the garden at the minute, if anything?
Nothing for me. I ordered some Evans cherries this morning, so I got my berry bushes, my orders in, but that's it for my department. Yeah. Canada, I'm under snow, so...
Got to get those orders in.
Yeah.
For us, we still have snow on the ground melting. So I have some row covers with carrots in the bed. We're still harvesting. That's about it in the garden. We got the greenhouse going. It's full of perennials too right now. So I got to make some space for our seedlings. And January is always exciting. This is like, you know, I always think the new year is really we're approaching the new year in my world in spring. So energy is just starting to build for us around here.
Yeah. So it's been a little bit different weather wise for us here. We only just got snow that stuck to the ground. So in the last week we've had three or four good dustings and showers of snow, but not the normal depth that we'd anticipate. So my ground is just frozen. For the first time in the last week or two. And, you know, that's created a few little challenges about, you know, sort of how late we can actually garden. You know, so we were doing activities in December and into early January before the snow came, just getting a few more garden beds planned and prepped. And then, we're stopped now until probably April in terms of any kind of planting activities. And so now, just like Lindsay, it's all, and you guys as well, it's all focused on orders, you know, so we're starting to go through seed catalogs and pick out what things that we want to have, to replace seed that we've consumed, in 2024 in our gardens, figure out what new things we want to add in that are different plants that we've not grown before, and, start looking at orders for our customers for all the trees so we can get those ordered and coming in time in spring.
Great stuff. So
there's a comment here from Rebecca Birdwell. She's over in Austin, or she's in Bastrop, Texas.
Oh, cool.
And she's saying she's sunbathing now, catching some some of that, getting some vitamin D and loving Central Texas, growing tenders in her microclimate, and it's really warmer there. So she's an avid planter. You know, she's got a lot going on her property, so that's great, Rebecca.
That's class. We know sunbathing here. for a while yet. Yeah, so if you want to get on to the main topic now tonight, which is the very topical, the one of the wildfires in California, and basically what solutions or how, I suppose there's a number of ways to look at this. It's like how do you design it? How do people help it? Do you paint your roof blue for them, the death lasers from the sky?
That's a big topic right now.
So I suppose maybe start off just anybody want to start off just on Graham, did you have any experience of fires in Australia? Was it
a lot, unfortunately? Yeah, so in the entire 37 years that I lived in Australia, and you know, since then I've seen so many different fires. It's usually every year to second year that we get some kind of major bushfire taking place in some part of Australia. As you can understand, it's as large as the United States if you don't count Alaska. So it's a very, very large geography. And probably 3/4 to 4/5 of it would be classified as some kind of fire danger zone. Obviously, the deserts are not, you know, because there's very little vegetation out there. But, you know, when you look at the eastern seaboard, which is where most of our population is based within 60, 70 miles of the coastline, that's all eucalyptus forests all the way up and down the eastern seaboard. Southwest of West Australia, the same thing. The southern parts of Victoria, South Australia, the same thing. And so bushfire is a common occurrence, and, you know, one word, eucalyptus. And, you know, that could be a whole topic of conversation in and of itself in terms of its fire cycle. And, yeah, it's unfortunate in Australia that we've had so many bushfires. We kind of take it for granted that it's going to happen. So I feel like we're a lot more prepared over there in terms of how to prevent it, how to mitigate it when it occurs, how to fight them when they get really bad, and how to take care of people so that their risk is reduced during very, very severe fires. But unfortunately, the very large fires that have occurred have typically resulted in, you know, sometimes multiple hundreds of deaths, great amounts of destruction. There's several towns that have been completely eliminated from the map at different occasions, including one where I did a design for a couple in Victoria, in Australia, that their town was one of the towns that literally got wiped out of off the map. About 2,000 people evacuated, very few deaths, fortunately, but all of the homes, most of the businesses were destroyed. They've rebuilt since. And obviously there's a big focus in that town and others like it on what to do differently and better in order to prevent or mitigate that risk of fire. So I'll stop there and just say that, yeah, I do have a lot of experience with it. And yeah, we can chat more about, you know, what that means over here in this part of the world.
So, right, I don't really, I live in an urban area. So for me, fire isn't a problem, but I would look at it. So you have mitigation, what you can do to prevent it, what happens when it occurs, and then the clear up. Does somebody want to start with mitigation, what you can do, and how would you design that in as a designer into your properties?
Yeah, sure. Well, this actually, I dreamt about this last night, so I'll queue up on that one. I was in my dream, I had this lilac, and I was planting somebody's design that I had designed, and I had this lilac in my hand, and I was like, well, what am I going to do with this lilac? So I'm looking around the property and trying to figure out where to put it. And as I'm walking around the property, I'm noticing like how close everything was to this property. There was tree roots right up to the foundation. And I don't know where I was in the world, but that's exactly what it highlighted for me, is like the designs of our current day and how close in proximity we have plants basically fueling these fires in between houses and whatnot, you know, utilizing shrubs for fences and things like that. So thinking about, you know, how close we're planting and how close we're designing in proximity, basically adding fuel to the fire. And of course, it's climate specific as to what kind of effect that's going to have, and ways that we can mitigate that by increasing mulch and water infiltration around the property and close to the home, doing things like that and thinking about these, you know, these barriers, these widths between trees, that wind's going to carry and all of that. So that's just one way. Don't plant the lilac right beside the house.
Yeah, I did hear that yesterday somewhere. I think it was the Survival Podcast. They were saying the government recommends to sort of get rid of all shrubs around, but you can actually put shrubs in that won't burn, and that can actually prevent sort of shelter the house as well from any fire. So that was a good podcast in case anybody, I did watch it for preparation for this. There was a guy on who was seemed to have done a lot of preparation and research around fires. And basically what he was saying was it's the forest management is a big problem where previously there was animals there that were actually doing the forest management. Yeah. But now they've come in, they've like logged it, left a biodiversity desert. The animals aren't there doing that cleanup. And then it's basically they remove the elements from a system and not replace them. And then there's that disconnect, which a lot of dead brush. And then he was talking about, fire breaks and then water management. He had a great one that I thought was really good, where he has his water storage, his rain catchment, and he basically directs that to a sprinkler on the roof. So when the roof gets saturated, all that water runs back in his rain catchment, so it provides that loop. I thought it was a pretty smart design. Go ahead, Sean.
Unfortunately, I've been seeing a lot of different things. You know, I mean, I had 3 years of living in Southern California and got to witness a couple wildfires myself. Obviously, they've been getting a lot worse since I've been there. But now, you know, I'm even seeing people like burning all around their property to help protect the fire from actually, you know, like a controlled burn around their fire, which, you know, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I've been, you know, watching Zach Weiss's videos on, you know, water systems and seeing what beavers could do. And I know they're like a big species out there. And, you know, we're kind of funny on how we're managing systems, you know, and people are still building homes in California that aren't really fireproof. So by design, we failed ourselves. I think that moving forward, it's going to take a lot more, you know, larger thinking, you know, and I'm not certain that these like small solutions are the answer yet, but I know that all of us together doing these small solutions could make a huge impact. And yeah, I don't know. It's pretty wild to experience all this and see it all happen.
So did you actually experience any fires when you were there?
We got evacuated a couple times. I experienced two. We got evacuated both. It was in San Diego. We were like in the El Cajon and area. So like just like mountainsides, they were not even nearly as large as what we're seeing now. But I was just getting into gardening then. We had a huge eucalyptus tree in the backyard. I mean, we were definitely, you know, I remember seeing how dry everything was at the time. Most typical backyards in California are, you know, like xeriscaped. So just rocks and, you know, let's see, I don't know what plants they had really. I mean, it's been a while since I've been in that climate. I'm in Missouri now, so we don't have much of a fire issue here. but yeah, it was pretty wild experience. I mean, just seeing all the smoke, I mean, that's another problem. You know, people that are being affected by the fires, indirectly, through their gardens being polluted, by ash, from all the surrounding landscapes and homes being burned down. So that's going to be a good thing to be looking at, and highly recommend people getting their microscopes out and soil tests.
Sorry, Sean, I think your microphone's playing up there.
Is it? Yeah, sorry.
Jesus, only...
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, it's like sputtering. I'm not sure.
This might not be the best mic. It's what I got.
Yeah, there's some interference. There was earlier today, but it noise a lot worse. It was intermittent.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, I was talking about the like indirect effects of the fire that we're going to be we're facing as well. So there's a lot of angles when it comes to this, you know, groundwork with fire and, you know, in all regions of the world, you know, Graham in Australia, just like you're saying, it's really no different. It's going to take a lot of action, and I'm glad to be here and just offering any kind of solutions or insights or perspectives.
Yeah, and I just got a comment here from Rebecca saying she's, I'm all ears here. Great topic. In our Bastrop fire, part of our problem was overgrown Yukon, which is not managed, is super flammable.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been there too. It's pretty dry. Yeah.
Yeah. So I also had the experience of living in California from late 2017 through 2020 in two different locations up in the foothills of the Sierra Nevadas, up above Fresno and Coarse Gold specifically. And then also over in Fairfield in the Bay Area. And in both locations, we experienced a lot of fires. So the 2018 Paradise Fire is one that affected our family. You know, I got an eighth cousin living in Paradise and her daughter. They had to evacuate. They barely got out of the home, like with 2-3 minutes to spare before it exploded in fire, literally following the last fire truck out of town. We had a lot of smoke in our area, in Fresno and Coarse Gold. We're probably 20 minutes away from the southern edge of the worst fire to hit Yosemite in probably 100 years. And it was just, you know, devastating to drive through the southern end of Yosemite and see the destruction that had taken place, several redwood groves that, you know, had been impacted. In any event, you know, I made the comment earlier about eucalyptus, and, you know, that's actually an introduced a plant or species in California. It's brought in during the gold rush years in the, you know, 1840s and 50s to try to create a source of wood for making railroad cross ties more than anything else, and lumber for home construction and for mine timbers, etc. And then it, you know, basically got out of control simply from the point of view that it's, you know, it's a perfect environment in California for the eucalyptus to dominate. No predators for it whatsoever, no other plants that can really outcompete it. And, you know, its fire cycle is one which is designed to propagate itself. So it really depends on fire to germinate the seed and to crack open the seed nut. And it's a very, very oil-bound plant or oil-bearing plant. The leaves of eucalyptus oil are just... as soon as the heat comes from the fire front, starts to evaporate those oils from the leaves, and then that propagates the frame front further in front of the ground front of the fire. I've seen forests and trees explode in that heat, you know, from the oil being liberated. And so, you know, that's a plant that doesn't belong within the California environment, and unfortunately has been there for now 170 years and is pretty much endemic from... I'm going to say just north of the Bay Area, all the way down to Southern California and beyond, and all up into the foothills of the Sierra Nevadas. You know, so it was all around my place. And, you know, we did the effort to clear, you know, 100, 200 feet away from our house. That's a mandatory requirement in California now when you're, you know, in high brush areas with fire smart planning. But, you know, there's a lot of other things, you know, Cormac, you asked from a design perspective, you know, the water systems, you know, and sprays. That's a big part of what works in Australia, is actually to design fairly robust spray systems to protect the home, putting in place water-protected bunkers, you know, so that people who don't have the ability to get off their property quickly can go to a bunker, much like a tornado shelter that would be used in parts of the U.S., and, you know, protecting that with enclosed air, filter systems, water systems, et cetera, to protect, you know, from the heat. And that has been an effective risk mitigation for folks in Australia that's resulted in a lot less loss of life. But, you know, I think that the biggest thing we can do is regenerate the soil so that it's moist and damp. You know, lots of organic matter to hold that moisture in the soil and keep it cooler. And then the right selection of plants. You know, so from a permaculture perspective, it's understanding which ones are fire resistant, fire retardant, you know, whatever words you want to use, and, you know, the ones that are going to help to reduce the risk of fire spreading.
Yeah, I might even add plants that attract wildlife that help manage those systems, those hydrological systems, if you happen to be near these water sources, which, you know, in some cases in California, that is the case, but I'm not sure where they're starting. But from a design perspective, you know, we could do what we can do and to help.
Yeah, I got a random bit. Can I throw a tangent in there, Cormac?
Yeah, of course.
Wicked. I think that one value that I'm seeing, you know, and I don't mean to demean anybody's grief and loss, and of course, these are awful fires and people are losing their homes, but I feel like people are listening, you know, and people are paying attention, and that there's an opportunity here to rewrite the stories, right? Like, all of this is going to have to be rebuilt. So we have an opportunity here with some very, you know, high profile people, hopefully want to make some decisions towards alternative ways of housing, right? Like, how can we build houses? So let alone designing for the houses, how do we build the houses now instead of being, you know, these flammable materials and whatnot? Kindling. There's so many other options. And I feel like this is setting the stage for fireproof housing, right? Like hempcrete and things like that. There's so many different ways we could be building these houses, let alone the planting around the houses. So yeah. That's one thing that I'm seeing in all of this, is that it's really highlighting all of these, you know, issues that we do have some solutions for. So hoping that some of these people that are spearheading large movements of people take these opportunities to go down some of these pathways where they can start, you know, let's build differently, let's do things differently. So that's the opportunity that I see in all of this.
It's, I always find it very frustrating when you see like documentaries about hempcrete or other materials and they say this is fireproof, and but that nobody builds with it. And it's crazy. Like, you're building, and I think it's like, well, if you're building wooden structures, a paper plasterboard, highly flammable materials, doused in chemicals that still go up anyway. Yep. And it's like, why not use the natural materials? And it's when they come out with these solutions, particularly sort of an off tangent, when they start talking about climate change, it's like, well, you're not building right, you're not looking after your land right, you're not doing all these things right, but then you're just having this one, like, sort of the big demon word. And let's tax everybody to fix it instead of actually finding these solutions and finding the building materials that you can not mass produce, but you can build a lot of houses with and be fire resistant.
That are also permittable, because that's a big issue too. Fighting permits with the city and building in the...
Yeah, different counties, different codes, different states, different, you know, different countries, and the solutions are available. I know here it's the case where people try to build eco homes, and it's like, no, that's not. You almost have to rip up the book and start from scratch. But the same people who'll tell you, no, that's not against our code, will be the ones out promoting the environment the very next day and telling us we should all do all this stuff or we're all going to die. It's like, well, just let me build an eco house that I have no electricity bill. I use the natural light. I use natural materials as fire resistant and all these things. So I would hope to be an opportunity, and as you say, it's with a lot of famous people, a lot of influential people, getting the message to them that there is alternatives. I don't know. I'm not sure. Hold up, much hope.
some examples of some good things that have happened, though. And so, you know, one of my favorite methods of construction, you know, mainly has served us well in Australia is straw bale housing. Yeah. You know, because we're second largest producer of wheat, and you know, we have a lot of straw left over. So straw bale has been a thing now for probably 40 or 50 years. And that's a good one that if it's done right, you know, with straw bales and properly enclosed with a good, you know, stucco render on it, has been demonstrated withstand up to 2,000 degrees centigrade, you know, blow torches on it, you know, and just barely crack without catching on fire. And because there's the displacement of the air within the wall, even if that does crack, then you're getting charring, not flames, not burning. And so that's one that's been proven to hold up to fire from a fire code perspective. And I think it was the city of Austin in Texas that was pretty proactive about allowing this to occur. They brought it into the building code and created a separate construction code for straw bale housing and demonstrated, you know, the fire resistance of it, you know, as the basis for bringing it into the fire code. So they didn't really care about what material that you used as long as you could demonstrate it will withstand a 3-hour fire rating exposure, you know, which is the actual standard that's set by the National Fire Protection Agency. So, you know, once they could demonstrate that it could achieve that 3-hour period, you know, of fire resistance, then that's what got it through the code. And then they implemented it to allow people to construct with that. I believe it was City of Austin.
Yeah. So, so we have mitigation. And another point that was brought up in that podcast and I never thought about was the damage that's left after these fires because of all the stuff that's in the houses and the heavy metals that went into the ground and the asbestos and all these things. I never even considered that after a fire.
Yeah, I mean, it's a plastic city. It's, yeah, a lot there.
Lindsay, have you a few comments there on the Instagram?
Yeah, the Lorax, the mycelia, right? Like, I feel like the solutions are there too for that sort of thing, right? And it's just, we're just at the cusp of learning all of these things. Like, the solutions are there. So, you know, now it's another time there for the mycelia to rise and say, hey, look what we can do. And, you know, I'm hoping that we'll see more of those solutions come out from people like Peter McCoy and, you know, Paul Stamets. I'm sure they could list 10 off the top of their heads right now, you know, to help with all of this regenerative, you know, soil remediation that's going to need to take place. So I'm excited to find out about what it is. It's like, it's all there. It's all there.
Everything in nature shows up when it needs to, so we just got to show up and learn from it.
Well, you know, we're all permaculturists here, so we also understand that we've got an array of plants that we can use to bioaccumulate all of these toxins, especially the metals, right? So when you think about a lot of these homes that were built, you know, as many as 100, maybe 120 years ago, some of them, you know, where there might be lead pipes in the building, you know, so you've got risk of lead contamination. Who knows how many different metals there are in the different construction materials used for a home. But you know, certainly we've got an array of things that we can plant that can help to reduce that risk in the soil.
Maybe some of those even dried to create bales of straw to build the next home.
Exactly.
One solution pipe there. What was that, Sean?
Just a pipe dream.
Yeah.
But would love to see it.
So one solution they had was a sock, what they call it, a straw sock.
Oh, yeah.
It was basically they put it around their cars and their homes off contour. Mm-hmm. And basically the straw soaked up all the – so as it rained and all the junk had washed off the house, that this sock effectively soaked it up. It was like a carbon.
Yeah,
biochar. Like a carbon. I think it just used hay or straw.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, and just because it was that's what they had. But if you have biochar, something, and it's just basically filtered the water running off there. That's what I thought was another great idea.
Yeah, I've been seeing that actually being even in California right now being placed in the storm drains with char specifically to help kind of filter out those particulates. You know, well, there's going to be a lot of runoff. Their monsoon season. I mean, they're about to get a lot of rain here in the next, you know, a few months. So a lot of work to be done.
Yep. Well, at least there's solutions.
Yeah. And that's absolutely.
So anything else on fire before we move on to interrogating Sean here? Yeah. no comments here. Right, Sean. What is it, Sean?
Oh, I said I got no comments. Yeah,
no comments. So, Sean, do you want to take it away there and just tell us about your new venture that's coming up, and the three of us will just ask you questions as you go.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, my business I just launched Sunday, like I was mentioned earlier. I got to speak at Our Future, presenting on a lot of topics that I hope to inspire us to come together and work together on some of these solutions. And, you know, we're all facing this together. Even, you know, we're all here from different places all across the world, and we're still talking on these topics. And so my work with Roots and Culture is to really inspire, educate, and empower others to take on these more like regenerative and holistic modalities to all of these problems of the world. So, I mean, we have the solution, so it's just about taking action. And you know, I'm just getting launched. I'm in the midst of crowdfunding. This is actually going to be an ongoing crowdfunding. Like I like to call it a crowdfund for the regenerative economy. So everyone that gets involved can, you know, whether educators, speakers, I'm actually working with artists and musicians that want to get behind this movement to generate donations. And half the donation is going to benefit the speakers and performers. And then the other half will go to what I'm calling the regenerative fund, which I hope to actually help fund groundwork initiatives, whether it's indigenous led projects or regenerative citizen scientist projects, you know. And also another one that's really important for me is like family and community scale regenerative farms. And all of this work, you know, is like acting as a hub. I see actually these family farms, community farms being a central hub for people coming together to gain inspiration towards these regenerative works that we need to really tap into to get towards, you know, to work towards these issues that we're facing together. And yeah, so it's going to be, you know, it's just getting started. We have a lot of work to do. I plan on getting my operations crowdfunded to finish writing my book. I'm going to be having a free online course covering everything permaculture, holistic management, indigenous ancestral wisdom, inviting us all to come back into relationship, into a, you know, us scientists, you know, permaculture type people, you know, we get really quantitative in our reasoning and in our approach to having, you know, solutions, you know. And I want to invite us more into a qualitative approach as well, and getting right relations and, you know, getting in a more of a local economy so we can even gain more support as we take these actions. Because I know that in my journey, I've more or less been alone. I got a beautiful family. I mean, we're all doing this together. But as like an entrepreneur per se, I've been working at this alone. I've been a designer, you know, and even us all together, we got to work in a cooperative model. And I believe that made a pretty great impact. I know it made a great impact in my life as a designer, being able to work with you all. And essentially, I'm trying to create a cooperative model in the hearts of us all to just really step in and start taking action. And I just hope to offer, you know, inspiration, empowerment, and encourage everyone to tap in. There's a lot to be done, and I think we can have a lot of fun on the way. So I'm going to be inviting musicians. I've been networking constantly, and I've put together like a virtual stage similar to like what we're doing, so we can stream live and people can spread the message and hopefully generate donations, not just for our operations, but to benefit these speakers. And you know, I think it's gonna go far. I don't know, I hope so. It's like my absolute dream. So it's all becoming real, and it's just hitting me every day. It's really been 7 years in the making. It started with a whole nother nonprofit model that I had going. It was actually called the Permaculture Education Center, Graham. I know you're working on that, and it's a brilliant name. I think you should. I don't have the rights. I don't have the domain for that or anything anymore. So, but yeah, that was, it was very much aligned with Matt Power's work and his curriculum. And I'm still going to be taking a lot of that on as an affiliate of his. But I'm writing my own book now, and I'll have a free online course to help promote all of this and talk about all of these, you know, from my giftings, my skills, what I can share, and hopefully as well, like, invite you all, everyone, to be a part of this online course, to be a collaborative effort as well, to spread, you know, to spread their skills and insights and everything. So it's gonna be a lot of fun.
Go ahead, Graham.
I was going to say, what do you define as your sphere of influence? Is it global, local in Missouri, all over North America? What's your territory, so to speak?
You mean with Roots and Culture particularly?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a global thing. You know, and I've gotten inspiration. I mean, like I said, I mean, the last year or two, almost 2 years now, is where all of this has really been shaping with Roots and Culture. I've been, you know, I'm a father of three, homesteader. It's been an incredible journey. I mean, I've faced so much hardship getting to this point. It's insane. I'm happy to be here. And so I do plan on having a global reach. I have people from all over, like an incredible amount of people from Africa actually reaching out for donations constantly. About once a week, I have someone sharing some sort of GoFundMe or something like that. So I've always wanted to find a way to actually help them, even though I have $3 in my bank account right now. Like, you know what I mean? Like and people are asking me, like, I'm like, I would love to give you money. Like And so, you know, in a way that the inspiration came from that. But ultimately my, you know, where my heart's at is going to be my region. And I'll be talking about in my book, what I call the regenerative food circle. And that, you know, in agriculture, it's typically looked at like, you know, a local food economy is usually like a 300-mile radius. And I'm kind of looking at that same model as far as impact on a like a local regenerative economy with farmers. And so I'll be actually, and through my work, I'll be featuring a lot of the success stories from my area through like a set of docuseries and interviews. And Cormac inspired me to get on a podcast maybe. So we'll be sharing a lot coming from home, and we have a demonstration site here. I'll be inviting people. We have local chefs. We'll be doing a lot of farm to table events, and we're a band as well. So, that's where all the music inspiration came from. Like, I just wanted to blend my worlds. You know, I have a twin brother who is a music producer. He does everything, music wise. I get to just, you know, help. I get on stage and I play, and I did create the actual concept of our band, which is called Seventh Fire, and it's based off the Seventh Fire prophecy, which is giving us a choice right now. And I believe this is the time. This is where I think the prophecy is coming to play. And you know, I've made a choice, and I've chose the abundant path, and I want to share it with everyone. I want to invite everyone. And that's what we'll be doing through our music. And so we have a platform now. So it's coming from everywhere, Graham. I just, you know, I love everybody. I just put my heart out there, and, you know, I'm gonna be as vulnerable as I can. And I just want to see a better world for my kids.
Yeah, that much you always have done. I mean, you've got a big heart. There's no doubt about that from the times that we've interacted, and, you know, the way that, you know, you've shown up with your customers that I've seen you do as well. So
thank you.
Congratulations first on, you know, starting your own business and for stepping out to do that. And I know you've gone through a lot of hardship to get to this point. So well done. And certainly from my perspective, I wish you all success, as I'm sure does Lindsay and Cormac, so, and everybody that's out there.
Sean, I was hoping actually if you could like just verbally say, since we're streaming to like six different channels, like maybe you can drop in the chat and just verbally say, you know, like, where can people find out more information about going to your GoFundMe? Like, what's your website title?
So I actually don't have a GoFundMe. I'm actually, the platform is the, it's through PayPal. So, I mean, I'll give it that. But Roots and Culture, which is actually, I couldn't get that domain. It's like $13,000. So that actually helped me create a title of my book, Roots Create Culture. And a lot is stemmed off that. I mean, there's a whole story there. But you can go to our website, Roots Create Culture. It's going to be an ongoing crowdfund for all of us. It's, you know, I know we're going to be crowdfunding for our operations, me getting the book out there and the course and these docu-series and all. I mean, there's going to be a lot of stuff going on. I hope to get to this full time so I can network with people like you guys, educators, musicians. And yeah, you can find me on all the, you know, I'm mainly sticking, you know, to the social platforms that I find work for me. And that's been Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. I just started the YouTube as the this launch. So I put my Our Future presentation up on there. Matt graciously let, you know, he wanted me to put that out there. So I'm promoting that. So I'll be doing a lot on YouTube. I'll be uploading this to YouTube, this chat here. So yeah, social media.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love how you say you're the qualitative over the quantitative. I completely resonate with that, as Graham knows. He's like the numbers guy, and I'm the farthest thing from it.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And the music infiltration also, right? I'm also a musician, and I see there's so much overlap in this, right? So we're throwing an introduction to permaculture weekend out at my friend's house. He's got Eighth Fire Innovations. He's a hemp builder.
Eighth Fire, that's cool.
Yeah, and we're going to have a music festival as part of that weekend, right? Like, because it's inherently part of it, right? You're going for a weekend. Yeah. You're going to all get education together. You're going to have music at night. We're going to have, you know, campfire songs and all that sort of thing. But then the people that are there from the music festival on the Saturday night can get an eye into what we were doing Friday, Saturday for the education, and can contribute to the project on Sunday as part of the installation of the project that we've designed for the education.
That's amazing.
So it's a great way. Like, it's this gateway bridge where you can just, you know, introduce people to permaculture through, you know, hey, here's some of your favorite musicians. You want to come for the music, check out how awesome life is when you get your hands in the soil, exactly. That sort of thing. So I see there's like that natural progression. And I think it's amazing. Like, I love your heart that you're just like, you're just doing this because you love it and you've been at it for a long time. And yeah, congratulations on everything that you're bringing together here for your nonprofit. And also seeing that IN, right? I have the same request, you know, from all over the world for money, for projects. And so there's a huge need for that. And you know, that there's other people that are working that maybe are super financially stable and acting like Robin Hood for the people that, you know, can't afford these projects. So it's just lovely to see that there's so many people that want to do this kind of work where they're creating designs for the people that can't even afford the designs to restore their watersheds, provide food for the people. Like, that's amazing. Thank you for the work that you're doing.
Absolutely. Thank you. And I do want to note that, you know, if you go to the website, I have a pretty creative little timeline that'll kind of show where all this is going. And I do very much intend on having an actual in-person Roots and Culture Music and Arts Festival, hopefully next year if everything goes well. And that'll be like a kind of, I want to scale it out regionally all across the world. I want everyone to take on this model. I would prefer it to be a free festival. I would love for our organization to be able to pay all the artists and educators to show up at these festivals so that all the money that is in exchange at these festivals is through the vendors and the farmers that support it with their food and just keeping the economy of it all localized, you know. So a lot of traveling musicians are, you know, that's actually where a lot of my inspiration came from, was the struggle as well with musicians and artists. They're very parallel. Farmers, we're all like us creative folks, we're just really struggling in a lot of aspects. And I've seen how traveling artists really struggle. So I wanted to give them an opportunity to stream from their home and hopefully make an income. And I like to call it a perennial income, because it'll be an ongoing crowdfund, and we'll be putting all of this on our YouTube, every presentation, performance, all that. So it'll be a lot of fun.
So then you have more information on this on are you doing a live on Sunday, aren't you?
Oh yeah, so yeah, Sunday, this Sunday, a time to be announced. And To be just totally honest, I haven't even put together my presentation. I'm going to be extracting a lot from my website and stuff, so I'm not too worried about it. It's going to be a total live format. I'll be essentially kind of presenting, you know, my story and a lot of the, you know, in more detail what we've just been talking about. And then I'm going to open it up to a full open discussion and Q&A. And, you know, I want feedback from people. You know, this is totally open. I'm not attached to any way of doing this. I've built the website. I've done everything. Like, you know, we have a social platform. You know, if anybody wants to get off all of these other platforms, we have one built in-house. I'm working on getting an app, hopefully a TV app so people can stream on their TV, like these performances and workshops. And I'll be going into more detail on Sunday with all of that. And so I do invite everybody. I'd love to see all three of you there. It'd be great.
I'll cheer definitely try my best. And for anybody listening later on, we'll try and if you go to Sean's Facebook page, what's your Facebook page, Sean?
Most of the action is just my personal page, Sean Stanton, on Facebook. I just started, as you guys know, the algorithms are constantly, you know, fighting us. So, but you can follow us at Roots and Culture on Facebook. I'll probably get a group going there soon. But like I said, we have a social platform. I would love to see a lot of action on there. People sharing their stories and hopefully sharing solutions for the California fires. And, you know, hopefully acting as a platform for people to really just, act as the mycelial network, if you will, you know, and, you know, they can tap in and start taking action collectively.
That all sounds fantastic, Sean. A lot of work's been done that, and I'm looking forward to seeing you make a success of it.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that, Sean. Have you any other questions, Lindsay and Graham, for Sean?
Where are you?
I'm in Fordland, Missouri, which is about 30 minutes east of Springfield, Missouri, in the Ozarks here. We're actually on the Finley River. We're very blessed. We looked for property for 2 years and were able to get on a beautiful spring-fed river. We have our water source is directly out of a large freshwater spring, and just feel absolutely blessed to be here. It was a long time coming. We just left Kansas City 4 years ago, so... this is the slowest project. I built 10 farms up to this point. Well, 9 farms. This is our 10th farm. This is the slowest going one. And I'm so grateful for it. And I can't wait to invite people here and hopefully have retreats and stuff. So invite you guys here. Yeah.
That would be nice. I'll take you up. I'm planning a world tour of America.
Yeah. Right.
Bring it,
Paul. Yeah, bring it. I'm confident to wait too. Yeah.
As long as you let me back out.
No, we might keep you here for good.
Yeah. Sean, that's great. So I suppose now it's what's in the pipeline now for the next month for everybody, garden wise, work wise. Lindsay, do you want to go first there?
Sure. I've got 2 designs I'm going to be wrapping up. I just finished recording an 8-week course for a designer that I'm mentoring. So looking at my part 2 on that one. Wow. Oh, there's so many, Cormac. My brain's just like, oh, what to talk about. Those are the major ones, really. Just a lot of networking with home people right now. So I've got a bamboo architect. I've got a rammed earth builder. We've got a hempcrete builder. So because it's on the brain, right, they're all like, whatever you think about, you know, you attract. So talking to a lot of those alternative home builders, Earth in Hand, Scott Howard, always talking back and forth with him. Yeah, that's all I'll say right now. I'll pass the ball.
And I'll catch it.
Right.
Okay, so probably 2 biggest ones. You know, Lindsay mentioned a trip to Florida that we've tentatively got planned for February. And I'll probably be the organizing person for most of that. There's a lot of customers that I've got down there to go see. So, you know, being a month in advance and starting all the planning for that activity and trying to hit 10 or 15 spaces in 10 days. It's going to be a bunch of fun and challenge for all of us. And then You know, my biggest activity that's just come to the surface, I mentioned the solar farm. I've got 40 acres of land that I can access at no cost for potentially the next 30 years. And I mean, it's this huge, big opportunity, and I want to grab it with both hands. And so it's really now the project manager of that site has asked me to put together a proposal for what I want to do to manage that 40 acres and potentially also move towards the vegetation management aspects inside the field, which would be another 160 acres. So there's a great opportunity to do something very, very different and special with that particular solar farm location. And so there's a lot of resources needed. You know, Lindsay and I have been very, very good about speaking the vision and manifesting stuff. And, you know, so I'm trying to manifest now all of the human resources, all the great peeps to come and help with that. And then also the financial resources that are needed. And then, you know, obviously working with Lindsay on this, you know, to come up with a conceptual plan and, you know, how we can present it to the township so we can change the ordinance that's very restrictive. Presenting it to the management of the company itself, which seems to be pretty progressive in terms of how they're managing some of their other investments. And so it's really trying to put like 5,000 piece jigsaw puzzle together and starting with the sky instead of starting with all of the easy recognizable bits. So that's my landscape, literally right outside my window here, where I'm hoping to make a big change.
Wow.
Sean, what are you up to next month now in the garden and on the homestead?
Yeah, so I actually just met with my neighbors. We just got new neighbors, beautiful young couple, just actually our same age. They got a five-year-old. We were just talking about it all last night. We're kind of building a village model here and collectively working on our garden spaces. I very much take on like the market garden approach, very similar to like Richard Perkins' work or Jean-Martin Fortier. So, you know, I've had a lot of experience in market gardening. We're going to be, growing a lot of bulk crops. So right now we're just like in the plan phase, like what do we want to grow? Figuring all that out. I've had logs from all the years, but again, that was for like market production and maybe a lot more diversity. I plan on actually breaking ground in like other smaller spaces, like I said, we bought a big piece of property and built our own community. And so our backyard's just been a blank slate for the last 4 years. And I want to do more of like an urban-esque, you know, like raised beds. So we're going to be doing a lot of bulk crops. We're going to be doing in our market gardens, I should say. And then, working on these smaller garden spaces for all our herbs and teas and kitchen garden, if you would. And then, so planning stage, breaking the ground where we can, as long as the soil's workable, you get out there. It starts now. So, waiting for the snow to melt, getting in the greenhouse, getting some heated trays going for hot peppers and onions and, and getting the worm farms like revamped and all that. So just really excited. So this is always like the most exciting time as a gardener. It's like, it's all in your head. And, you know, I just, there's a lot to say, honestly. Like I've probably said a tenth of what I'm like actually getting into. I am working on my tree order, all the orders that I need to make, amendments, stuff like that. I'm really wanting to get into soil microscopy. So Matt, you know, I got gifted a soil microscopy book. I hope to take his course and really dial in our soil solutions here. Had a lot of experience with it, but I want to get better at it. So I invite everybody to do the same. Get planning and, you know, figure out what solutions are going to work for you. Yeah.
Thanks very much. That was very useful for our listeners here. Also thinking about planning the garden and but don't get overwhelmed by it all as well.
Yeah, just start somewhere, you know, and I always like to say, you know, make mistakes because, like, it took me 10 years of making mistakes for me to just know the little bit that I do. And it's just what it takes. And it's hard to make mistakes right now. The biggest mistake right now would be not getting started. So And everyone learns that halfway through the summer, they're like, man, I should have started a garden. So hopefully you take away from that.
I started my first garden and it was July. I still got something out of it. It's too late. I said, oh, well, I got something.
You got something, yeah. Well, good.
Yeah. Although it was a mess. Guys, that's been great. Thanks very much. We'll just go around and say where you can find everybody. I'm Cormac Harkin. You can find all my stuff at findpermaculture.com, where we have a beginner's blogs, about 40, and also all the podcast episodes. Also a guide on if you're considering like how do you get into permaculture or what courses. There's a good page there of different links of people who've been on the show and the products they offer and services, which is great. And also as well, links there to Permaculture Canada if you want the design. Go for them. So Lindsay, where can people find you?
Find me all the social media things, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, for Permaculture Canada or Armagarden, YouTube also. And yeah, you can go to our website. You can book a call with us if you want to do like a walk with me program and just have us assess what you need for your property, and we can meet you where you're at and work with you at whatever level you want to work with us.
And you can find me at all the same places. It's Lindsay at Permaculture Canada is the tag for most of our socials. If you want to find me personally and see the work that I'm doing locally here in Michigan, it's at Graham Towerton on Instagram.
Cool. Yeah, and you guys heard mine earlier. I also did want, and, you know, so I would love to invite everyone to go to my website, rootscreateculture.com. That's absolutely where I would love everyone to go and reach me. You can actually get on there and book a connection call. If you want to teach a workshop, promote your business, if you want to join the multi-vendor marketplace to promote your products, that's totally free to join. You get to choose the commission level you want to share to the regenerative fund. We'd love to get on a call with you guys. You can schedule at any time. It's on the home bar of my website. You can connect with me. Or we can get on a 15-30 minute call just to connect, and that's what I'm doing right now. I love getting in these personal, you know, more engaging ways of communicating, because, you know, social media is very limited. You can find me on all the Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. So
that's great, guys. Thank you very much, and thanks to everyone who commented and liked and gave us a thumbs up. And thanks for listening to this for the last hour. And I'll chat to you now. I have a couple of podcasts coming out next week that I recorded. So I have Filippo Chesney coming up. He is doing some great stuff in temperate climates with Centropic Agroforestry. I have Marjorie Wildcraft coming up. And I also have a family permaculture, children in permaculture coming out this week as well. So he's keeping an eye out for them episodes. And thanks, Tazzarello Just Grows Now. Thank you for listening. See you all next month for our monthly update with Permaculture Canada. And Sean, we'll see you on Sunday.
Yep, we'll see you.
Cheers.
Thanks, guys.